Dudesman Podcast. My name is Stephen Dudesman. I am your host, and I am joined this week by four of my very best friends in the whole wide world. What's going on, everybody?
Hi.
Hey.
Hello. Podcast week.
It is in fact
podcast time.
It is in fact podcast week. This is episode 296 of the Engaged Family Gaming Podcast, as we get ever closer to episode 300. Which is very exciting. So to just do the formal introductions, to my, to my right is the wizard behind the curtain, John Tomlinson. John, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good.
Yeah.
Doing okay.
You've had a day. I'm glad that we are able to podcast today and give you something fun to talk about. To his right is the Mistress of Magnificence, Mom, the board game, the managing editor of board games. Is that the title we made up for you?
Yes, that is the current made up title.
Yep. and that is Linda Roble. Linda, how are you?
Hi, doing great.
Good.
Getting back into the groove of everything at school and life and
yeah,
things are good.
Good. And on the bottom row, on the left hand side, doing a little dance, is my very best friend in the whole wide world, Amanda Farrow, the Princess of Power. Amanda, how are you?
It's podcast week, so, you know, I'm doing much better than I have been for basically the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, it's podcast week!
It is, in fact, podcast week. And finishing things out, last but not least, the man from the frozen north, Jeff Walker. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. I love that we all have nicknames, and I just realized we have Mom, but we also have Pop.
Who's Pop?
Princess of Power.
Oh, the Princess of Power. Hey, well, all right. You know what?
Mom and Pop.
I like that. I love this for us. We're a match set now.
True, even better.
What's wild is I totally didn't even know. So
he's from out west, so like they call soda pop.
So yeah, you just got it on the brain. Okay, I'll allow it. So
the resident Canadian.
Yeah.
This is not the first show of the year. Last time we gathered, we were just talking. It was all excitement. We were talking about the games coming out in 2023 that we were looking forward to. Lots of fun stuff. Lots of hype. Lots of excitement. This is a slightly less hype filled, but no less interesting news roundup show, because believe it or not, things have actually occurred in the video game and board game space. Some of them very great. Some of them we can't talk about, because what's the point of us talking about the ratings for The Last of Us show? Although I've been watching a zombie TV show, guys, and guess what? It freaks me out just as much as I thought it would, but I'm doing it because my mother is watching it, and she wants to talk to me about it. So I have
Aww.
To.
Aren't you such a good son?
You're a great son.
Did you tell her that she should ease you in? Maybe you should watch Zombies on the Disney Channel first.
Nope. I'm going right in. Right into The Last of Us. And you know what? I'm going to be real with you. The shorts before the opening credits are the craziest horror things I've ever seen in my life. And there's no zombies in them, really. So, like, it's freaking me out. Anyway, I guess we did just talk about The Last of Us 2 on a Family Gaming Podcast. But, well, The Last of Us TV show. Is it just the year for Pedro Pascal to save annoying youths? It's just this is the year for him to do that. Like, I mean,
apparently.
I love me some Baby Yoda, but he is annoying, like, objectively. He just gets away with it because he's cute and can kill you. I mean, let's be real. Well, tell me Baby Yoda is not annoying.
That would be like Gizmo is annoying. You can't really say Baby Yoda is annoying.
You know what? Here's what I have to say. The dude who is in here defending Baby Yoda has not had a toddler yet. So I would just like to say...
Not my own, but yeah.
I'm just saying...
Yeah, stole one? Yet.
No, I mean, well, I mean, he's everybody's uncle.
Yeah,
but,
I really am.
But that's... As a guy who has had three obnoxious toddlers, that's what Grogu just triggers me on so many levels. Like, the scene with him in the ship and he's just pushing the button... I was just like, oh my God. I looked over at my oldest and was like, that was you. That was you. Anyway,
That was him now.
The scene where he eats the frog is like trying to get the toddler away from the dog food.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Anyway, so we got all sorts of cool stuff to talk about because, believe it or not, video games and board games, news happened. And so, yeah, let's just kind of get right into it unless anybody has something very like a pressing story they want to talk about. We had these in like a rough order, but I'm going to talk about probably the biggest news in gaming this week. And that is that Amanda wrote a book. Did you guys know
Woo-hoo!
That Amanda wrote a book? It is.
I didn't know. Really? Are you sure?
It is called Digital Playgrounds, Our Kids in Video Games. And Amanda's going to put it in the chat. And it was written by Amanda and our and friend of the show, who we have to get back on here eventually, but she's one of the busiest.
When she's less busy, I can't even get FaceTime with her, and she's my co-author.
I know. Oh, trust me, I know. We'll get her eventually. I mean, the reality is we have two vectors between you and me, and I am her bestie. You're her co-author, but I'm her, you know, I'm her BFF, so, like, the two of us
can
track her down. So, but it's a great book. I have read it. It's a lot of great information for parents that want some extra perspective and ways to think about, you know, the kids and the games they play, etc. It's going to be a whole thing. It's great. And like I said,
six books.
Yeah, there's going to be a whole lot more of them. So we're going to be talking about this for a while. We're talking easily the biggest news in video games ever. I do have one other.
You're so good to me, bud.
I am good to you, but also I like killing jokes. And I'm just going to absolutely stop that joke into the ground because it's also.
I'm here for it.
But I do want to. I did get something in the mail that I forgot that I was going to bring. So hold on, everybody. Banter.
Oh, we have to banter? Oh, we have to vamp?
Oh.
I'm not
okay. I'm great at vamping.
Wait, we're in charge now. We can do whatever we want. There's no cops. No cops.
Yeah, but you got mom and pop.
There's no mods. We have mom and dad here. Sure, yeah, it's fine. Mom and pop. I love that so much.
But if so good. Steven off his own podcast.
Yeah.
Like Survivor.
Ooh, we're getting nasty like that.
Wow. I leave for just a few minutes.
We waited.
Did I leave for like less than a minute and the Midwest guys start fights? Is that what...
This Midwest guy has had two successful coups, and I'm not afraid to do a third one.
Okay, well,
oh my.
So, I had a Kickstarter come in.
I'm not lying. So. I'll tell you the story someday.
And I want to talk briefly about the arrival of the Avatar Legends tabletop role playing game.
Oh, nice.
Ooh.
So, Amanda, did you guys get yours?
No.
Oof.
No, we still don't have ours. We don't have ours, do we? The Avatar stuff hasn't shown up. It finally shipped.
Okay, finally. So you'll get it soon because I got my shipping and got mine very soon. So when this came, we fans of the show will know, we talked about this quite a bit when this was on Kickstarter. The only reason Linda didn't back it is because I did, aggressively
basically.
So. And so you know, we got the core rule book here, which, by the way, beautiful core rule book. Amazing art inside.
Look at that. Look. It's so gorgeous.
That's our girl from Legend of Korra.
That's right.
I was not supposed to have those kinds of feelings about a cartoon. But also, I got, you know, I did the thing, so I got the dice.
Oh, we did too.
The combat action deck. And this is my favorite part, actually. An adventure book. The Wan Shitong's Adventure Guide, which I haven't even taken out of the plastic.
Oh, man, so excited.
Yet. So that's cool. This is a cool dice bag. So, because I went in and bought the whole thing. So here's what I really, really dig about this book. And this is what I'm going to say. This is going to be wildly available. I would not be surprised to see this, like, in bookstores, friendly local gaming stores. This game did so well. But my favorite part about this book, because I started reading through it, the first half of it is literally just a history book about the world of Avatar.
Oh, man.
And it gets
into so great.
Some super cool details. Like, one of the things that you do while playing the game is you choose an era. And the era that you choose not only determines the map that you play on, because different cities are different things. Like, for example, Republic City in Legend of Korra, if you play it during Avatar's time or you know, during Aang's era or even before that. It's just a little fishing village, that kind of thing. So it changes the map, but also it changes the political dynamics, and they actually even give you examples of what kinds of games and stories you should tell within those eras. So, you know, and it gives you five different, and so you've got, going backwards, that you've got Korra's era, where it's all about, you know, growing technology and imperialism and, you know, colonialism and, you know, stuff like that. But then you can go back to Aang's thing. It's like, if you want to fight against an oppressive force, right? Like, if you want to be the rebels fighting against the Fire Nation, you can do that. And then you go back to, and then you just keep going. Kiyoshi's era, where it's all about the different tribes setting, the different tribes and kingdoms setting their borders. So it's a lot of conflict while they're kind of building the world. So there's a lot of frontier, and it's kind of a Wild West setting. So cool. And it really goes deep into talking about characters that I never had heard about and events in the game that I had never heard about. And it talks a lot about Avatar Kyoshi and her, you know, all the stuff that happens in her books. Like, it really ties all the fiction.
Those books, by the way, are awesome. Well, I read them. I love them.
Now that they were fully spoiled for me by the role-playing setting, I absolutely want to read them too. So, yeah, this is, from a tabletop role-playing game perspective, I think the mechanics look very neat. I like the way that you're building characters. I like the way that the combat works. I think it's really cool for telling neat stories in a world that is almost universally loved. Like, I've never met anyone that was aware of Avatar The Last Airbender that didn't like it. I just met a lot of people that didn't know about it. So I think it's one of those really cool, awesome worlds. We're going to see way more of it in the future because they're doing shows and movies and, you know, we're going to see a lot. It's a mega brand is really what's happening. We're going to be talking a bunch about mega brands, I think, by the end of our podcast today. So, like,
and considering that the brand itself has been around since 2005.
Yeah.
Like, let that sink in.
It's really hard for me to do that because that means that I'm old. But I talk about that a lot. This is one of those things. This is not some crappy thing that was just thrown out.
No.
It's a good system.
I'm excited.
Good writing.
I'm
so excited. The art is obviously amazing. So definitely something to take a look at. We will talk more about it as we finish it, as, you know, who knows what kind of content we'll be making about it. But totally forgot about that for the entire pre-show. So sorry for pulling that one right out of nowhere.
Oh no, how horrible. We get to talk about Avatar.
I know.
Oh no. Something positive.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh no, whatever shall we do?
So am I correct. All five of us know and love Avatar, right? This is prerequisite for being on the show. I should have checked on that before. Okay, good.
Yes, I have watched it.
I love the M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Except, well, that doesn't count.
You get out. John, I see you.
I'm trolling.
You knew.
Yeah. Don't hate me.
Jeff, were you about to say that you did not watch Legend of Korra?
I have not watched Legend of Korra yet, but it's on the list.
Here's the thing with Legend of Korra. It's much shorter. So it will be it's a quicker watch. I ended up binging it in like 2 days.
Very doable as a weekend watch.
Yeah, it's definitely a weekend watch. A weekend watch is a really good description. You know, remember, with a lot of the cartoons, the episodes are only a half hour long, they're really like 20 minutes long, so you really just churn through it. Because remember, Avatar, The Last Airbender, and Legend of Korra were originally developed for television. So
yes,
each episode's like 21 minutes long, so really, when it's like, wow, this is 18 episodes, really it's not. So,
but it's funny that arrived for you this week, because I just the other day watched MatPat of the Game Theorist on his Film Theory channel just did an Avatar theory, and it was very interesting. So I learned a lot of the history I did not know.
Yeah, man, listen, cool. It's wild how deep that lore is getting, and it's really only getting deeper because the books are successful, so they're just going to keep making them.
They have their own studio now and going to be making stuff for Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah, and feature films. Like, we're gonna see all.
Hopefully, don't suck.
You know what? You know what? I believe that, because these companies that have formed their own studios to like do stuff, to like kind of oversee the creation, like Sony making their own stuff and like kind of overseeing things. I think that has, that will, I feel like that will prove to be beneficial. And so that leads me to believe that maybe Avatar Studios will not put out Avatar crap. I mean, they want the brand to be real big. So I believe in it. Let's talk about some other news. How about if this was announced 2 weeks ago, this would have been at the top of my most anticipated games of the year list. And I'm not even really exaggerating. We got an announcement about Steam World Build.
For real.
So John and Jeff, did you guys see the announcement for Steam World Build?
I did not. I saw the title.
Okay. John, what about you? I know Linda didn't, because
I didn't see it until you showed us the show notes. I did open it up. I like it a lot because it just feels like the best things about the SimCity mobile game, and then just like with that, just really into Steam World. I know you love the Steam World universe, so
the Steam World universe is it. I'm moving in the direction of the Steam World being like one of my favorite game franchises. Because every time a Steam World things happen, I lose my darn mind, and really. It really does. It makes no sense. So SteamWorld, for those listening that don't know, SteamWorld is a series of indie games where every game is in a different genre. This team, they could just be making SteamWorld Big 8 by now, and we'd probably still be playing it. But what they started with like a couple of Metroidvania games, a little exploration, digging, mining, etc. And then they went to SteamWorld Heist, which was a side view turn-based strategy game. They've done a card game. And I was wondering, it was a card-based RPG, which we know card-based RPGs do very well in engaged family gaming content. So we knew that they were going to make another SteamWorld game, so I was wondering what genre were they going to tackle next. And I remember texting Amanda when I was done with SteamWorld Quest, like, what are they going to do next? And both of us were like, I don't know, your guess is as good as mine.
Because there's just no way to know.
Yeah, there's no way to know. They can do anything. They could have come out with like a 2D combo based fighting game with like Arc System Works, and like I'd have been like, cool.
Cool. Sign me up. Let's go.
Sign me up. I'm in. And they're making a town builder. And so I think John nailed the head.
I'm gonna be way into that.
Yeah. The core mechanics is on the top level, you're building a town to house, entertain, feed, and support your people, who then go underground into a mine that looks like it plays kind of like a real-time strategy game. And that just seems kind of awesome. And it's still in this steampunk future where everybody's like a steam-powered robot. It's really weird looking. But it's really like tongue-in-cheek, full of puns. Everything is just silly. And that's kind of my aesthetic, because I live
for silly.
I love stuff that doesn't take itself too seriously, and this definitely does not. There's a demo out right now, and it's coming to PC and consoles this year. They did say, because it is a town builder, so, you know, those tend to have trouble on consoles. They did say that while it was developed on PC, they did assure us that they were going to take, that they had taken steps to try and make it play well on consoles, which historically when companies have come out and said that at the beginning, they've generally been right. But I still feel like this is probably going to be the correct place to play this is probably going to be on PC. That's just my guess if I were to make one. But I am going to play that demo this weekend. So for our next podcast, I will report back on Steam World Build and let everybody know. I'm really excited that it's a demo and not like
love that we're in demos. Like one of these episodes we should sit and talk about demos and why they're so great. Yeah. But not today.
What was your first demo? Ooh, that's a good community question.
That's a great question. I have some embarrassing answers to that.
Okay.
Jeff, you were talking. What were you gonna say?
We said we weren't talking about, so I was just saying Like, I just miss, like, demos have kind of had a comeback. They kind of fell off for a little bit, and, I mean,
well,
I remember going.
You know what? I'm in charge. Let's talk about demos. So, let's talk
about
demos.
Doing it now? Right.
Let's just do it. We'll do, like, a little taste, and then we can, like, really do a full thing dedicated to it. I think it really is wild how they, like, show up, and everybody loves them, and then they go away. I know, Amanda, from a developer perspective, demos have got to be a pain in the ass, right?
They've got to be a what?
A pain in the ass, right?
So, okay. Let's do talk about this from the developer perspective on this one. Because, and this is my one disclaimer on this show, I work at a consulting company that I no longer own. I shut down F Squared. Like, F Squared's just kind of like hanging out now. So I work for Robot Teddy. And Thunderful actually owns Robot Teddy. So, like, I work with developers all the time now. And I work on a number of different funds. One of them is a prototype fund. And prototypes are really, really interesting little creatures because they are usually the precursor to a demo. And prototypes are super cool because they give you a taste of what a game is all about. So it's not necessarily that building a demo is difficult or that it's bad or it's hard or whatever. Demos are just their own different creatures, right? Like, it has to be polished enough so that people can enjoy themselves. You got to onboard them properly. It's got to be tasty enough in order to get people to, like, really sink their teeth into it. The problem with demos isn't the difficulty level. Problem with demos is that they're really, really easy to fall into the trap of working on them forever and trying to make them perfect.
Yep.
That tends to be the issue with demos, or working on a time crunch because you want to have it in Steam Next Fest, or you want to have it at PAX, or you want to have it at an Indiecade or something like that. Like, it's the crunch or it's the perfectionism that gets the developers on that stuff.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, I certainly respect all that. I definitely feel, you know, especially considering the industry-wide conversation on crunch, the idea of crunching for a demo, knowing that you have to crunch on the game afterwards.
Exactly.
Has got to be a thing. But developer, it being a challenge for developers aside, I mean, they have lots of challenges.
Games are miracles.
Games are literally miracles. From a like a value perspective, demos are amazing. I mean, Linda, as a parent, I mean, all of us are parents, mm-hmm. basically. But like from a parenting perspective, having your kid be able to try the game. I mean, what do you think?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, my kids lean hard into the YouTube and seeing streamers showcase games, but sometimes those are demos they're showcasing. So being able to see it ahead
of time.
That's
what I used to do.
Exactly. So they lean hard on that piece of it. And then they'll come to me and say, Mom, can we get this? And then I have to go back and go do my research and consult with you experts because I know I know my limitations.
Well, I mean, but thankfully for you, mm-hmm. resources like Engage Family Gaming exist where you can come in and just say, yo, what's up with this thing that my kid saw this YouTuber play? And if it's Roblox, we can scream and set it on fire. And if it's anything else, we'll just be like, you know, we can give it.
We'll look into it.
We can give a different.
Exactly.
Answer. I mean, at least, you know, so, I mean, they've come and gone. I mean, Jeff and John and Amanda and I will all remember demo discs. They can't use the
oh, yeah.
magazine.
Oh, really? Oh, my goodness.
You would, like, OXM magazine and, like, PlayStation magazines, they would come with a disc.
PC Gamer, man.
PC Gamer, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. What era was this? Because this must have been 90s. Like, was it the 90s? Because
yeah,
I don't
mid,
remember
mid the late 90s.
Was it only with subscriptions? Because I don't remember the magazines when I worked in the bookstore having discs. So I wonder if that was...
They stopped making demos. And this is something that's really interesting. Is they stopped making the disc demos probably around like 2000, 2001.
Okay.
Because they became cost prohibitive. And instead, Gathering of Developers, which is like one of the very first like big publishers in indie, they started putting out digital demos. That's how we ended up getting, oh goodness, is it Sam and Max? It might have been the original concept for Sam and Max through Gathering of Developers. And that went online. And if not for that demo going as viral, and viral is relative in comparison to what the internet was, you know, like 23 years ago, you know, they ended up like really finding that success. But without that, they may not have even made that game. They might have moved on to something else. And I mean, that was one of Crow Team's most successful and, quite frankly, iconic franchises. And it all came from a demo.
And it's funny, I'm thinking back. I'm like, I bet you that there were magazines. I was just blissfully ignorant. And I'm putting out these magazines that are shrink-wrapped, not realizing there's these demos inside, because that's not wasn't my expertise, nor was it something people were coming into a bookstore necessarily as their prime objective to get that and consult with me.
I can say with certainty, because I was during that period of time, probably late 90s, you know, I was working at Blockbuster Video, and we carried the video game magazines, and I can say a huge problem for those was shrink, because people would in, grab the magazine, walk to the back of the store, take the disc.
You find just the magazine and the plastic wrap. Yep.
And then you can't sell an OXM magazine without the disc in it. So it was like, you know, so it was a huge battle. And so they were constantly trying to do stuff. It was always in shrink. Eventually, I know a couple of the magazines started actually putting the disc into the binding in the center of the magazine. So not only did you have to rip open the plastic, but you really had to like go hard.
You had to go look for it.
And which is expensive, because the theft prevention stuff made it more costly, right? Because you had to print a special kind of magazine, basically. So so those discs, I mean, there are some folks where like, It comes up every once in a while where you'll get like a round table of people talking about like their favorite PS1 games. And there's a few people that are like, well, you know what? I got to tell you, like my favorite PS1 game is probably this one demo that had like a level of Tony Hawk and a thing of Metal Gear. And it was like, it was just my favorite disc I ever got. And because they had these really cool, like bite-sized chunks of all these famous games, and then some obvious some stinkers, because not everything is a slam dunk. And then, you know, they went away for a little bit, and then they came back during the beginning of the 360 era, and I remember lots of time demos and stuff like that, and we all loved them again. And then they went away.
I think time demos are kind of making a bigger comeback, especially with the way PlayStation Network has set up their PlayStation Plus, which I don't like the way they do. I'm a full-fledged member, but like the fact that they hour gauge it instead of giving us demos like it used to be.
So strange. Like
forcing it on the developers to create those time-gated stuff.
That is onerous, by the way. Yeah. Having to be forced to create demos is onerous, as opposed to opting to bring them to something that is a timed event like Steam Next Fest.
Do you think that, you know, and then they went away for a bit. Do you think that some places use like early access as like a kind of demo program, even though it's not really a demo because you're paying for the product? Do you get the sense?
Absolutely. I think the Founders Package stuff with like Dreamlight Valley, like a lot of that stuff is still in development, and was it Steam Spotlight, or what's the name of Steam's Greenlight or something like that?
Greenlight.
That kind of stuff, where it's that entry level stuff, where it's how it was 20 years ago. Like I know Linda doesn't realize it. Like if you've ever played Doom back when it came out, that was on a floppy disk. That was shareware. That was like before demos. Like you had to get an unlock code to like actually play the full game. So that's where demos came from.
Huge progress, huge growth in the industry.
Yeah.
Enormous stuff. Honestly and truly.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. In order to see where we are today, we've got to look back to where we came from.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I just remember back in the 90s, my parents, we'd go to like Walmart, and what they do is they take me back to the electronics section, and the demo kiosks were my babysitters while they went and did the shopping.
Until it reset on you. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, Yeah, did everybody's parents do that?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, my parents definitely did.
I mean, yeah, they just dropped you at the kiosk.
We're going to shut up.
Yeah, Linda's parents, they did
no.
not. They did not. That was that.
There were no consoles in my world. That was a no. Yeah.
Yeah.
Different life
experience. But there is now.
There is now,
you're
man.
You're here now.
Yeah, you know, man, like trying to imagine, imagining little Linda asking to be dropped off at a video game kiosk and her parents, as I know them, saying that.
You know and love them, and you can just imagine the absolute horror if I had requested them to, like, leave me to play a video game. I mean, the atrocity of that. My goodness.
I would have been. It would have been it's like, absolutely. Hi, honey. Oh, thanks. Ooh. My wife just came
back from her internship. The real question, though, the question that is on everybody's mind right now is, what was everyone's first demo then? If we're going to say it, we should say it.
Oh, all right. So what's the first demo? I have to look it up.
Okay.
Oh, I think
so the one that I remember was the demo for Jagged Alliance 2. Ooh. I remember that one. That was 1998. I love Jagged Alliance. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was like the most memorable demo that I played, but I think that the first demo I played might have been Duke Nukem.
Wow.
I think it might have been. And I was very young. That was desperately inappropriate, but it was great.
Shout out to Megamonic.
Because I definitely played the full game.
Shout out to
right after.
By the way, throwing out the gift sub. So thank you very much, Megamom, and welcome to the Engage Film and Gaming Podcast. We heart you big time. All right, so Duke Nukem, honestly, much respect to the Duke Nukem demo. We have an answer from Megamom. So the first demo she played was for the Nightmare Before Christmas game on the original PlayStation.
Wow. Dang.
That's so we're gonna go counterclockwise. Jeff, what was your first demo ever?
So it's one of two, because one I definitely remember playing at Walmart, and one before we had a PlayStation, my uncle, when we would go visit him in Minnesota, had a PlayStation. And I remember just playing over and over again first like 10 minutes of Final Fantasy VII.
Okay.
That's as far as you could play, was up until the bombs exploding, you escape the bomb, and then it's over.
Okay.
Who knew years later that would have such an impression on how I think that game's overrated, but that's neither here nor there. The other demo I remember playing at Walmart all the time is they had a demo of Mario Party.
Oh, man.
And it wasn't even a demo of Mario Party, it was just the game hooked up. You got to hurt your neck by playing it like this.
Yep. That's always the way it went, man.
It's true. Linda, was your first demo at an EFG, like, when we were, like, working? Me dragging you at, like, beefing to some game?
That's exactly what I was going to say. My first demo was at beefing, going up there and getting my first dose of going around and seeing these prototypes and the demos on them. So that was a very different first experience.
I love that. I mean, I love that your first
your fault.
Demo was 100%. Well, I mean, a lot of game stuff is my fault.
That's true. Most of it.
Yeah. A fair amount of it is my fault. Tomlinson, what was your first demo?
My first demo was probably Quake. Like the original Quake, yeah. But my most memorable demo was probably PT, even though it wasn't really a demo.
Oh, man. We still have it.
I think we have
We still
it.
Have it that on one of our PlayStations.
Oh, you're so lucky. Oh.
I feel like that's
it's
a demo.
It's still so good. It is a demo. It's 100% a demo.
For those that don't know, it was a unreleased demo for a would-be Silent Hills game starring Norman Reedus from Walking Dead. And it's one of the greatest horror teasers. It's like 2 hours, hour long, depending on if you play it right. But like it could be like 20 minutes.
I watched a TikTok length amount of this game. PT yeah. stands for playable teaser, by the way, Linda.
It does. Yep.
Thank you.
I watched a TikTok level, like less than a minute of gameplay.
Yep.
And I noped out yeah. so hard. Like I didn't even download it when it was free. Like it was free. Anyone could have gotten it. I knew yep. I should have downloaded it because it was like it's part of gaming history. The reality is, it is the exact kind of horror that I can't handle. Because it's like, I do.
Oh, it's worse than that.
It's mind bending.
Like, I know what you can handle. It's worse than that.
There's a reason I didn't even download it when it was free.
Yeah.
Like, and there were lots of people, like, this was like a running joke EFG-wise that, oh man, Steve, we're gonna make you play PT. How many times were you like, oh, we're going to make you play PT? There's just no way you could do it. There's just no way. Yes. Mega Mom in the chat saying Steve plus zombies equals no. Fun fact, Mega Mom, I'm actually watching The Last of Us TV show. But I'm doing it for my mom. Doing it for my mom. Who loves it, by the way. I didn't mention that in the beginning. She's all in on the Last of Us.
My father's the opposite. He's like, it's too much like The Walking Dead. I'm like, you don't understand. The story that Naughty Dog does is so much better.
Anyway, wait, hold on. All right, I gotta tell you guys my first demo. Legit, it's Doom. I'm just gonna say it.
Yeah.
It's Doom. It's Doom 2.
The shareware Doom.
Now, here's the thing. I don't know if what I was playing at school was a demo of Wolfenstein, because I never got to play a lot of it. But they had somebody snuck in to our tech lab's computers and put Wolfenstein on every machine. And we only really
got to man.
And so we
and you wouldn't know until someone left it open that it was hidden on there. That's all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
So somebody just came in with
when we all had Novell NetWare or whatever the heck it was, and we all had to like really have those workarounds in our back pockets in order to put Counter-Strike on.
Yeah.
That's what I did. So, that's what I did. That was my legacy.
Now we're talking long like before Counter-Strike.
I think I need to change. I think I realized what my first demo actually was. Because they just announced the compilation pack coming to the Switch, but my first demo was probably Pajama Sam.
Pajama Sam is strong.
Because I had Putt-Putt Goes to the Parade or whatever, and
Putt-Putt Goes to the Moon was my favorite.
So we do have another comment from the chat. Kahi Keys saying that she's with me. Her first demo that she recalls is Doom. And I think that Doom is just like one of those things that
it's iconic.
If you owned a PC at that time, someone at school was throwing around a Doom demo disc.
Just a floppy disc. Yeah.
A floppy disc with Doom on it. And so the other thing, and I will never be able to remember this game, but like we had a demo disc. And it actually came pre-installed. It wasn't even a disc. It was a pre-installed demo that came on my dad's Compaq Presario.
Oh my word.
Throwing it back.
We're really going for it.
And it was it's really cool. Like it was a top-down spaceship game and it was a timed demo. And so the idea is you would run around, shoot up bad guys, collect resources to build up your ship and get better stuff. So it was like Gradius, only instead of side-scrolling, it was like a top-down shooter. My brother and I used to try and like speed run that, being like, all right, we got 10 minutes. Let's see how much we can do. I wish I could remember the name because we played so much of it. We do have another comment in the chat from Mega Mom. She played the demo for Lemmings back in 1996. So that probably would have predated The Nightmare Before Christmas. Yeah, but Lemmings, another one that, you know, the PC version, you know, lots
fabulous
of demos
game.
First couple levels. So it's interesting to see these companies kind of moving around and, you know, it's interesting to see demos come back. I think, you know, as people that go to conventions, you know, we're going to keep seeing demos forever. I think Steam Next Fest is really
huge. That game is, changer.
That is, especially now that they figured it out. You know, the first couple of years were a little shaky, but like, you know, as everything Jeff Keighley does, like, he figures it out. So the Steam Next Fest that they do twice a year, right?
Yeah.
And so
Steam Next Fest is like essentially an amazing opportunity to dig your hands into lots and lots and lots of little indie games.
Yeah, I mean,
and they're not just cozy either. There's some really fantastic like fighting games. There's some great roguelikes in there. Mm-hmm. I think that was the first place that I saw. A number of games. Oaken, I think, was one of my favorite demos of the last couple of years. And Oaken is a card game.
Yeah.
That you play. It's so good. Oaken is great. The full version is out now, but I got it at Steam Next Fest as a demo, and I was like, I need this game.
I mean, Skatebird was at a Steam Next Fest.
Yeah, it was.
So it's like this is one of those things where I think we're gonna, especially on PC, we're gonna start seeing more of that. And I think it'll continue to oscillate with the big game, with the big name guys, you know, in their first party games, trying to figure it out. I think the way that they have kind of, I think at least with 2K games, I can't speak to everybody else, but I know at least with 2K, they've just started making their games free for a weekend. Their games as a service. Like, it's okay. Everybody gets to play NBA 2K this weekend for free. Go ahead and download it. You can play it. And if you want to keep it, you got to pay for it. And, you know, that's less, I mean, it's not really a demo, but I think it serves the same purpose.
But it's a demo in the sense that it gives you a taste of what the experience is, right? Yeah. Even as a game as a service.
Yeah. Nintendo's been doing that too. They did it with ARMS, like, was the first one, I think.
Well, oh, yeah.
They did it with Splatoon 3. They just announced, I think, next week, Uno is going.
Yeah.
Next week, like, Ubisoft's Uno is going to be.
Yo, Uno. Linda, you probably have not seen some of this because I don't know if your kids are showing you, but like Uno on Steam and like online Uno is like a big deal.
It's legit.
Played so much Uno on my Xbox 360 back in the day.
Yo, you know what? I was listening to a podcast the other day with a bunch of guys talking about Carcassonne and Catan on Xbox Live. And how they were like these big, like, seminal experiences for them. And it's just, it'll be interesting, you know. And I just thought it was funny to be listening to a very video game podcast. I'm listening to freaking Game Scoop, which is about as video game as you can get.
That's what I figured you were talking to, because I remember that episode.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, these dudes who I absolutely associate with video games, even though they obviously have lives outside of it, talking about. And so, like, all of a sudden, I'm driving and I hear like a dude talk about Carcassonne, and I'm like, wait a minute, what? Amanda is absolutely right. Like, the time release for a game of service, if you get 2 days to play Destiny, you may as well be playing a demo, even if it's not labeled as such. You know, I mean, if I were to talk about like my favorite, like true, like, I don't know why my kids have decided now is when it's the time to talk. So the like my favorite demo experience, man, like, you know, because my first one was Doom, but like my absolute favorite, I can't even think of it. I mean, I does anybody else have one? Because
a favorite.
Yeah,
Dragon Quest XI. You could play like 10 hours of it before it cut you off, and you could actually level grind. That's the thing. I like those demos that is just the beginning of the game, and then the game goes, because I don't want the demo goes into the game, because I don't want to play the demo, then have to play this same part of the game over again.
As a person who does previews of video games, I can confirm playing through a game and then playing through the game again is awful. Right, Amanda?
That's why I liked the way Project Triangle Strategy actually handled their demo. A lot of the stuff that comes out of Tokyo Game Factory under Square Enix has done like good stuff with their demos, where you sit and you play the demo, you can just import your save, no big deal.
Yep.
And those are the best kind.
Exactly. Those are the best kinds of demos, where you can take your progress and you can go ahead and port it to the full experience, and that is the best. That's what I love about modern demos, is that you are able to do that instead of being like, yeah, I played the demo for Jagged Alliance 2. Guess I'll play all that over again.
Yeah.
What
I did.
What I'm curious about demos, though, is Like, how often, you know, demos are there to get you hyped about a game. Like, I want to play this game. I want to know how often demos actually turn people away from a game, because that just happened to me recently.
That would be a really interesting conversation to have with somebody that works very specifically within Steam. I think that, like, Steam or even Nintendo talking about, like, okay, well, this had the opposite effect. It didn't convert to a wish list. It didn't convert... Yeah. Anything, people just pieced out. They took it off their wish list. I would be very interested in that data.
I think honestly that's what's happening with Forspoken right now that just came out today.
Actually,
I'm gonna piece out of this conversation because I have insider knowledge and I'm not gonna talk about it.
Okay,
fair enough.
Yeah, Amanda cannot.
This is just me speculating, but I can say I've been hyped for that game until I tried the demo and then I'm like, nope.
Well, I think what's happening with that game, because I think my bet is it's probably going to sell fine. I mean, it's probably going to sell what it was supposed to sell. Cause it's just like a random no-name Square Enix action RPG. You know, I bet you it's going to sell as well as it was going to. The reason that it's getting bombed on reviews is because it's just not great. And because we don't know sales numbers yet. For all we know, it could be getting sixes and sevens across the board. You know, kind of funny gave it a two. But like... if it sells, if it's like the number one game on, you know, the NPDs this month, Square kind of doesn't care maybe as much. So it's one of those, like, it's...
That may be the only thing going for it, in my opinion, is because there's really nothing out, like, nothing big out right now.
Well, it's staring down Dead Space in a couple of weeks. And I don't know about you. Not only do I not want to stare at Dead Space, I do not want to stare down Dead Space as my competition.
Dead Space in a couple weeks, and He Who Must Not Be Named in a couple weeks.
Yeah, so anyway, moving on from Forspoken, just because I would like Amanda to continue to be able to speak.
I'll come back now.
So it is, I am certain that someone at Steam has that data.
I would like that data very much. If you work at Steam, you should send me that data.
Where it's like downloads and then percentage wish list and percentage bought, because they know the accounts. I mean, the thing that's beautiful about Steam is you have to have an account. So they know all of the activity on an account by account level. So they know what games we look at. They know what games what sales we click on. They know how far we scroll down lists. Like, there's so much data, so they can do such cool segmentation.
The problem is they don't surface it unless you're a developer, which is fine, but it leaves the analysts out in the cold where we're just like...
Yeah, I mean, yes, but they could, want more. They could absolutely say, okay, this is the percentage of demos that generate a wish list, and this is the percentage of demos that turn into a wish list that turn into a convert. This is the number of people who downloaded a game demo and then bought it. Like, I'm sure they have that.
Oh, I know they do.
So my I guess the question would be, and this is where I don't know that they have the Switch, is how many people explicitly played the game, and like, cuz you don't report your hype level before you download a demo. Right?
Maybe you should.
Maybe. But then we get into like net promoter score and like wacky stuff. We could get into
the, fair enough.
We could get into the data science of this for this. That's a different
show.
Man.
Oh man, this is perfect. Let's go. Oh wait, we're not that podcast.
We're not gonna do that. I'll come.
This is not the business
show.
Of games for the rest of
I'll
us.
I'll come onto your show and we'll talk about it. Gatologic, okay, buddy. By the way, from the wonderful state of Texas, saying hello. What's up, Gatologic? Stick around. We're probably gonna be talking about something you give a darn about. So next thing. Moving on from demos, we'll talk more, and we'll do some surveys to the community, and we'll touch back.
That was a really fun conversation, y'all. Thank you for humoring me.
Of course. And like I said, I'm in charge, but I don't use my power for pure chaos. Sometimes I want to do good things.
Sometimes we want a little chaos.
Jeff, your game of the year just got announced. Tell me, tell us about WWE 2K23.
Yeah, so this is actually funny because Steven and I were texting, was it about a week ago? And I said, yeah, WWE 2K, I don't think it's coming out in March. And Steven says, yeah, probably not.
And then, 24 hours later.
24 hours later, it's like.
Don't you know that's the rule?
Day later.
The rule is the world needs to prove Steven wrong.
Yeah. They announced that it is coming out March 17th, March 15th, if you get the early pack. I'm going to say this joke because Steven wants me to. It has an empty cover, which is weird.
Yeah, this they made the choice, guys. They made the choice to not have a cover athlete for this year's WWE 2K23.
Even I think that's bizarre.
It's really weird that they chose to not have a cover athlete, but you know what? It's like a franchise that like really can just kind of, everybody knows what WWE is. So it's a big deal. Do we have, like, is there a legend mode this time or something? Like, did they announce like a big change?
Yeah.
Or?
So just to go down some of the things they announced, and I'm super excited because everyone knows 2K20 sucked horribly.
It did. In fact.
And that was because it barely functioned. Ukes pulled out or left forever. And if you don't know, Ukes was the company that was helping them create these games since the original WWF SmackDown in 99 or 2000. So 2K was left with kind of the bare bones. And so instead of making their own engine, they just kind of took scans of wrestlers that were already in it. Everyone looked horrible game. So when 2K22 came out, I was super excited because they finally made their own game, but I don't think they went very far with it. They kind of played it safe because, you know, they didn't want to make too many changes. So I'm super excited for 2K23 because it looks like 2K is finally ready to make this series their own. John Cena is the showcase. Super excited. He has a 20-year career. Outstanding individual. Has granted more Make-A-Wish wishes than anyone else in history.
Yeah. What's really interesting is the 20-year career, they actually had him on SmackDown on New Year's Eve as his first and only match of the year, just so they can say that he's wrestled at least one match.
Had a match every year for 20 years. Yeah.
I thought that was, I thought that was clever.
Yeah, and they announced War Games is going to be in this. And for those of you who are not wrestling aficionados, here's what War Games is. You have two wrestling rings that are connected by a metal beam in the middle. Around these two rings is a giant pole, a giant cage. The match starts with two people in the match. And every 5 minutes, someone from either team gets let into the match. So it'll be 2-on-1. Then it'll be 2-on-2, 3-on-2. Until all 4 or 5 people are in the ring. And then once everyone's in the ring, first team to get the pinfall wins.
It is, it's an old
mass chaos.
It's mass chaos. It's an old WCW thing that WWE got to take because they own all that IP. And I love War Games.
The matches at Survivor Series this year were amazing. And then they also announced for Universe Mode, they're revamping how the stories are done, which I'm excited for because they've kind of been the same stories for the last, like, 5 games.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping they take and just make them better. This game is hyped. 2K22 was my most played game of 2022.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, you're the biggest wrestling fan I know, so that's a really big deal. It's March 17th. The joke is John Cena was the cover athlete, everybody, in case you didn't know. So we're going to skip a couple of things. What we're going to do is we're going to save our discussion of the OGL for next week, for next time. We'll talk about the OGL in a couple weeks. Hopefully there'll be some more information. Hopefully, Wizards will communicate some between, then and now. So we'll have more to talk about. Because Lord knows they have not been communicating enough. And now, weirdly, they might be over-communicating. Who knows? Video games are weird. Dungeons & Dragons is weird. But I do want to talk about one last thing that we are going to talk this week. And we're going to talk about Marvel's Avengers for the last few minutes of our show. Marvel's Avengers. We have confirmed from Crystal Dynamics that the update coming in March will be the final content update for Marvel's Avengers. They're going to continue supporting it mechanically, like the servers are going to be alive for a little bit longer. But that game, I just want to know, Amanda, take us home on this one. How do you fumble the ball on the Avengers?
Arguably
the biggest
property
in the universe. Everybody,
you want me to put my business hat on?
Do you have like a small business hat? Like,
hey,
opposed to like a 50
tiny business hat.
Tiny business hat.
Tiny business.
It's a little bowler derby.
Oh, all right.
I'm going to tip my hat. Just like, it's right here. It's only on this part of my head.
It's
very
like
small business hat.
It's like a fascinator.
Yeah. It's like a fascinator. That's
it's
exactly
not a
what
Canadian's
it is.
Mountie's hat.
No, it's not a toque either. I'm not wearing my toques right now. So, the long story. I have boss size business hat. The long story short on this, I'll try to keep this like really brief. The problem is that Square Enix did not properly invest in their Western studios. And in case you did not know, Square Enix does not have any Western studios anymore. They sold them all to Embracer. And they did that for $300 million. I want that to sink in like just a little bit. That is like a minuscule amount of money for all the IP that they got. Tiny. It was basically a fire sale. We had like a whole special episode about it on Virtual Economy if you want to like go get super nerdy about it.
They traded like Power 9 magic cards for a $5 foot long.
Yeah. That's exactly it. It was just
they
like
just
how did you
giving
track
it away?
That,
it's just like they didn't want it anymore. It's like
no,
why?
They didn't
it's want to
deal
stuff.
With it. They didn't want to deal with it. So Crystal Dynamics is a great studio. It's full of exceptionally talented people, but a live service game, when what they were used to doing before was very single player oriented, this was the wrong studio. And they didn't have the know-how, they didn't have the infrastructure, and they didn't get the investment from higher ups in order to really do the game justice. And let me tell you, Marvel's Avengers is a very enjoyable game when it works. When it works, oh, does it hit. But that's the reason why they ended up fumbling the ball. It wasn't because they didn't put the time in, they didn't put the effort in. It's not that they didn't care. It's that Square Enix West was, it seemed like they were looking to tank the value of their Western studios so that they could offload them and they could reinvest in NFTs.
There we go.
Boom.
Business hat.
Okay, I'm going to take it off now. It's gone.
So, this is what's so disappointing to me. You know, investment-wise, etc. Like, this absolutely could have just been they could have just made an Avengers game. I'll wait while my daughter talks. I do this once every other week. Was that? Yeah, got a logic saying, oh, great, NFTs. I'm sure that'll work out. It already has not. So,
yeah, the Emperor already has no clothes.
Like,
okay. Very naked Emperor.
So, I'm just going to put on my developer hat here. I have a very little developer hat. Very little.
Also a fascinator.
It's developing.
Like, it's developing. Why didn't they just make a Kamala Khan themed Avengers game where she's building the Avengers and then just release story-based DLC every couple of months to go along with characters that are coming out in movies and not like this weird loot stuff? And like, they got so obsessed
money.
With, yeah, but I understand.
It was money.
I know that, but they didn't do it good.
No, because they weren't the right team for this.
Yeah.
What they should have had was a single player experience. If they would have built a Guardians of the Galaxy kind of experience for Marvel's Avengers, and let me tell you, like, it's, these are completely different games. They're completely different experiences by studios with similar pedigrees, but not similar studios in terms of talent.
Yeah.
So they, like, if they would have just done a single player experience like Jedi Fallen Order or Guardians of the Galaxy or something like that, something that focused on that story, because the story in Marvel's Avengers was honestly really fun.
Yeah.
It was super cool. It wasn't long enough, but it was very enjoyable.
Yeah.
they got caught up in how do we ensure that there's a long tail to this game, right? How do we keep our developers employed? How do we ensure that they're still good after this if this is the only thing we're working on?
Yeah.
And that's the safety mechanism that comes along with a game as a service, with a service game rather. Like that's the safety, is ensuring that you keep your team together to keep making content, to keep making stuff for the fans. But they weren't the right team for it.
Yeah,
they just weren't.
Yeah.
And it sucks because Square Enix could have done so much better by them, by helping them staff up in a way that was reasonable. But no, they were just like, peace, $300 million. We're going to sell everything in a fire sale. So great, guys. Oh, great.
Well, so the end result is don't buy a... Well, I mean, I guess you could buy Avengers now. Probably get it pretty cheap.
It's free on Game Pass, and I think it was free on... PlayStation Plus a few months ago.
Just put it on PlayStation Plus, yeah.
So here's the one.
Extra tier.
So one thing that I think is kind of interesting about it is, from a single player perspective, I mean, if you can get it for not a lot of money, it's great. They are making all the cosmetics and stuff unlocked for everybody for the last, like, year or so. So, you know, however long the servers stay up. So I think, you know, there's probably going to be some small dedicated fan base to this game. It's just... For me, and Amanda is right, objectively, she is correct that it was the wrong team that did it. It just feels like, it just should have just been two games where
they were done dirty. Honestly, they were done so dirty.
Yeah.
And then they didn't do right by their player base as a result of them having their resources yanked away. And if we think back to what it was at E3 in 2019, it was not even the same game that came out.
Yeah.
Right? That where they were talking about it, and they're just like, oh, there will be none of like the pay to win stuff and all that. And that ended up like not being the case because Square Enix had their way.
Yeah.
And they threw Crystal Dynamics to the wolves. And that's essentially what happened.
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
the whole thing was ridiculous.
Well, the good news is
Pour
one out for Avengers. They're gone. The good news is two things that are certain. One, Crystal Dynamics is going to make more games, just under Embracer. Who, say what you will about Embracer, but they like at least talking about making games. We'll see. And Crystal Dynamics, they make some good stuff, so I'm excited about that. And also, at least it didn't destroy the Avengers brand, right? So we will see further adventures of those characters in movies and other products. And if you really want your taste of Marvel right now, you can play either Marvel Snap or Marvel's Midnight Suns, which, fun fact, Marvel's Midnight Suns is one of the newly crowned EFG Essentials, which we haven't talked about yet, but we will soon. And also, Deadpool is coming to Marvel Avengers Marvel's Midnight Suns by the end of this month as part of its Battle Pass. And let me tell you, Deadpool is going to be real stupid in that game. He's stupid in everything. But so,
guys, that's the point.
Guys, we did it.
Did we do it?
We made it. So, everybody.
Darn.
I know. Well, time flies on podcast night, Amanda.
Woo!
So, everybody. I hope you guys enjoyed listening as much as we enjoyed recording, which... For the record, I'm setting the bar real high because this is the highlight of all of our weeks. We will be back in a couple of weeks. You're definitely going to want to, if you are watching this / listening to this, you're definitely going to want to head on over to engagefamilygaming.com/community and join our Facebook community. We have a lot of cool stuff planned there over the course of the year because this is EFG 10, our 10th anniversary. Our magazine is coming out very soon. I'm actually meeting with Becky on Thursday to get it finished. So we had some delays because we had some like medical stuff. Our EFG Con got kind of nuked by the hospital. But you definitely want to, so join the community, but also go to engagefamilygaming.com because that entire front page, even into the second page, covered with words of wisdom from one Amanda Farrow. And also some cool stuff from me. And some cool stuff from Linda. And we're just going to keep rolling out the content. So I definitely encourage everybody to check those things out. Kind of a little bit of self-plug for EFG content. So in 2 weeks, we're going to talk about the OGL. So if you really want to learn about shenanigans in Dungeons & Dragons, come for that. Also, tomorrow, there is an Xbox Developer Showcase, which none of us have any idea what's going to be there. And that's going to be wild. So I'm excited about the next podcast already, and we're not even there. Everybody, you have a great night. We will talk to you soon, and until next time, don't forget to get your family game on. We'll talk soon. Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.
Music for the Engaged Family Gaming Podcast is Android Sock Hop by Kevin McLeod, and audio production by Six Pack Nerds Productions.